This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com. Once again, I would like to thank Rav David Solomon for inviting me to come to speak to all of you here Thursday night. I'd like to thank also the gentleman who does the video, because literally, without exaggeration, by tomorrow morning, 12 o'clock New York time, this will be literally around the world because of TorahAnytime.com. So it's a great schus that we're able to do something that hopefully will be seen literally throughout the world. David is not able to be here tonight. His father is extremely, extremely ill, and that's why David had to be with him in the hospital. He's on a ventilator. His name is Shmuel Baruch Ben Golda. He should have refuah shlema, and everything that we say here tonight should be for his schus. I just want to say two things. Many of you who know me personally know that I go on many of these trips. One of these trips we spoke about one time here, about the Poland trip. So there is a card here. Everybody can take one. Anybody who wants to come with us on the trip, July 5th. This year it's a five-day trip. It's very, very intense. It's very beautiful. And this trip that we took for Hungary, Prague, and Austria, which was a fabulous trip. This is a set of one DVD, which is an hour long. You could watch it Chol HaMoed with your kids. And then seven different CDs of every topic under the sun that would go on in Hungary, whether the shoes at the Danube, or the Kvarim of Rav Shaila Karastira, and the Kol Aryeh, the Maral. Is just an absolute beautiful thing that you might want to get afterwards for your children and for yourself for Yontif. Tonight we're going to talk about a very interesting topic. It's one of my favorite topics, because I believe that this topic that we're going to talk about is nageya to every single yid in Klal Yisrael, literally 24/7, every waking moment. But I want to begin with a pshat that I once heard from Rav Yehuda Traeger, who was one of the Rosh Hashivas in Antwerp. Nebuchadnezzar, he passed away. He was a mechutin of the Novominska Rebbe. And I had this chus to meet him one time, meet him numerous times, but we spoke about this topic, and he gave me a very, very interesting pshat in a pasuk in Tilim. In Tilim Kufyut Tes, pasuk Samach. Kufyut Tes is the longest of all the kapitlach of Tilim. It's 176. I have never, ever heard a good answer why, and if anybody has a good answer, I'll give you a free book. You don't tell it to me tonight, you can call me. Because why is the biggest Masechta in Shas 176 Blat Bava Basra? Why is the biggest Kapitel in Tilim 176 Psukim, and Parshas Nosai in Chumash is also 176? What is special about 176? Nobody has ever given me a good answer, but if you give me a good answer, you'll. What?
In Shas it's 175.
What's? No, it's not. Yeah, but okay, it's Kufayim Bav. I mean, okay. If you got an answer for 175, you know, I'll give you a CD. Okay? Okay? But, so in Kapitel Kufyut Tes, those of you who know that it works 8 psukim with Aleph, 8 psukim with Beis, 8 psukim with Gimel. And then during the psukim of Ches, there's a pasuk that says it this way. Chashti, David HaMelech says, I hastened. And I didn't delay lishmar mitzvaysecha, to do your mitzvahs. So Rav Traeger asked, why does the pasuk have to repeat itself? Why does David say, chashti, I hastened, v'loi hismamoti, and I didn't delay? If I hastened, that means I didn't delay to do your mitzvah. What is the double lashon? So he said that he once saw a beautiful pshat, and the thing is like this. Let's say you see a guy running to shul in the morning. And you say, wow, that guy's a Zoris. He's so excited to get to shul on time. Terrence says, no, of course not. He's a lazy good for nothing. He woke up 20 minutes late. That's why he's rushing. Or somebody's rushing to get to the Muncie bus. And, you know, wow, he's so excited to get to work, right? No, he's not excited. He's a lazy person. He woke up late. That's why he's running. So David HaMelech says, chashti, I hastened. I didn't delay. It's not like I woke up late. I woke up on time, and still, chashti, I'm hastened, I'm running to do the mitzvah. And that's really what we've come to talk about the mitzvah of excitement, zrizos, enthusiasm. And I once heard, somebody told me, that the Baba Rebbe said this. I did not hear this from the Baba Rebbe, but it's so adorable that I'm going to say it. And maybe he's talking to the one who said it. One of the chassidim once told me he said it. He said that when the alarm clock goes off at 6:45, so that you should be out of bed and going to shul by 7 o'clock. That's the Kol Kol Yaakov. But when you put your hands on the snooze alarm, that's the Yadayim Yedei Esav. So it's an adorable thing. But the point is, of course, that we have to get up on time and we have to do everything. Bezrizos. Now, it's interesting that the Orcha Tzaddikim was a Sfarish Yid, and he wrote a Sefer on many, many, many different topics. And the topic that he starts with, by the way, happens to be Gaiva, because he says that's the beginning of the end of all relationships, when a person is about Gaiva, and a person has to be an Onav, otherwise it just cannot function with humanity. But one of the topics that he talks about is Zrizos, excitement, alacrity. And he writes like this, Midus hazrizos, the Mida of Zrizos, he tachshit l'chol hamidais. This is the jewel of any Mida that a Yid could have. That's the finest Mida of all, v'himus hakenes kulon. That could repair anything. No matter what problem you have in life, if you tackle the problem with excitement and enthusiasm, you'll be able to get it done and you'll be able to accomplish it. Now, I remember as a teenage boy, I was always interested in writing. And anyone who writes anything, whether it's an essay, whether it's a book, or a composition, or l'havdala sefer, the way you start it is very, very important. Especially you're starting an essay or a composition or a book. You want the people, even a newspaper article, you want to catch the reader so that the reader is going to continue, not that they'll just get bored right away. So the beginning is very, very important. So it occurred to me, I was wondering, you know, how did the one who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, how did he decide to start the Shulchan Aruch? The Tur, who was the son of the Rosh, he certainly knew every Medrash, he knew every Pasuk, he knew every Chazal, and he had to choose. Now, don't forget, he was writing, I once counted it up, 1,704 simonim in Shulchan Aruch. In Aruch Chaim, he got 697. In Yerdei, he got 403. In Ebenezer, another 178. And in Chesh Mishpat, 426. So he's now beginning the Shulchan Aruch, which is really our way of life, right? From Aruch Chaim, Yerdei, Ebenezer, Chesh Mishpat. And of all the things that he could have started, the Tur Shulchan Aruch, of every Chazal, he decided to pick out something in the Sechta Ovais Perikei Mishnah Gimel. Yehuda ben Tema Oimer. Yehuda ben Tema says, "Hevi az kanomer, be bold like a leopard. Vekal kanesher, be light like an eagle. Rotz katzvi, run like a deer. Vegibar kari, be strong like a lion. Lasais ritzayin avicha shabashamayim, to do the will of your Creator." Now, that's enthusiasm. That's excitement. Rotz katzvi, gibar kari. You get up, you go, you be strong, you're powerful, you run. Exciting. Imagine that's the first message that he wanted to give in Shulchan Aruch before you start learning anything. And when I saw that, I was so touched by it because of a story that happened to me when I was a teenage boy. Now, Rabbi Tzalo Wiedemann, who's sitting here, we grew up together. So he knew my father on Shalom. We used to daven literally in the same Dalet Amos, literally Dalet Amos next to each other for years and years and years. And so my father, every year he would send me to camp, and that was the highlight of my life every year, to go to Camp Agoda. There was nothing like it in the world. I loved it. And one year, Purim, right after Purim, he says to me, "This year you're not going to camp." And I was surprised. I was frightened, really, because I thought maybe we couldn't afford camp. Like, why am I not going to camp? You know, that camp is my whole life. That's what I loved. I lived for Color War, right? 11 months a year, I lived for Color War. Okay? So now, he said, "No, you're going to do something better." And I was thinking, what could be better? He said, "No, you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael." Now, this was in 1964, before the Six-Day War. Before guys were going to Eretz Yisrael, today, Kamat, every boy goes to Eretz Yisrael, every girl goes to seminary, many, many, I should say, not everyone, but many, many of them do. But that was unheard of. That was unheard of. In my graduating class, there was one guy, Yankel Hopfer, who went to learn in Ponovich. Some of you know Yankel Hopfer. Today he's a Rav Chashuv in Baltimore. He was a Rav in Denver for many years. But he was like, unbelievable. He was going to Ponovich. That was like he was going to another planet. Like nobody went in those days to Eretz Yisrael. So, and my father told me that there's going to be a Knesia Gedolah in Eretz Yisrael, for Agudat Yisrael, that all the Gedolim of all over the whole world were going to come there. And he said, "I want you to go. You're going to go, and you're going to go with your tape recorder." Now, of course, a tape recorder, I mean, these guys, they didn't even know what a tape recorder is, right? They didn't even know what a cassette is, right? You know what a tape recorder is? Of course not, right? So now, but those tape recorders, they weren't the little ones. That was an answer, like a boombox. You know, it was a big one, right? Reel to reel. Okay? So he said, you're going to go, and Rav Moshe is going to be there, and Rav Kreisworth is going to be there, and Rav Zalman Sirotzkin. Can you imagine? Rav Elia Lapian opened up the Knesset. Could you believe? Now, I'm telling you, I'm so embarrassed. I know I'm saying this in front of so many people. But when Rav Elia Lapian opened up the Knesset Gedolah, he started saying Tillim. And he got so carried away by the crowd, he started touching the tillum. And I was thinking, who is this old man? Like, what is that? I shut my tape recorder off. I couldn't believe it. Today I could kick myself. Imagine having tillum that Rav Elia Lapian said and he touched it. But I didn't know who he was. I had no appreciation for his godless. Although later on I went to see him and krachsid him. But the point was, you had all these gedolim. It was amazing. And Rav Kreisworth, like I say, Rav Small from Chicago, and Rav Moshe. It was just the most incredible thing. And in those days, in 1964, most people in Eretz Yisrael really didn't have a telephone. It's hard to believe. I mean, today everybody's got two cell phones, but over there, at that time, if you wanted to make a call to New York, you had to go to the post office, and you had to make a reservation so that you'd be able to have your turn making a call, which cost an absolute fortune. And then, of course, you had to know the time zones and the difference of time. So literally, for those 6 weeks that I was there, 8 weeks actually, I don't think I spoke to my parents once, but we wrote letters every single day. And it was like my diary. And I still have the letters that my parents wrote me because it was so special for them to live through me vicariously this experience in Eretz Yisrael. Now, near the end of the trip, I get a letter from my father. And he writes like this: you're coming back to America soon. It's Elul. Is there any way that you could go to record for me, he says, the person who goes and wakes up people for slichas? He said, I once heard that there's somebody who wakes up people for slichas. Could you go? I know it's 3 o'clock in the morning when he does it, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Could you go record it? And I was thinking, this is crazy. I'm not going to, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, my father doesn't even know if the guy exists, and I'm going to go alone? You know, it's frightening. Wherever you be, no matter where you are, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And he didn't even know if the person exists. I guess some people said he used to be here. He doesn't do it anymore. He used to do it. Nobody really knew exactly. And I may believe I didn't get the letter. I answered every letter except that one. A few days later, I get another letter from my father. He says, maybe the mail is slow, or maybe you didn't get my letter, but maybe, you know, you could do me a favor and record it for me. Now, he wrote a second time, and he's the one who paid for my trip, and he's my father, so how could I say no? So I said, I wrote him back, okay, I'm going to try to find out if this guy exists. And I get one of my friends that I got to know over there from the Chevron Yeshiva, and he said he would come with me. Now, in those days, you didn't have the Kaisel. We didn't have the Old City. Does anybody remember how far the Gvul of Eretz Yisrael was in Yerushalayim? Does anybody know? No, not Shmuel HaNavi. There was a certain gate. Anybody remember what that gate was called? The Mandelbaum Gate, right. That's where the yeshiva is today. That was the Gvul, right, the Mandelbaum Gate. So you knew that you couldn't walk past there. Now, we come there at 4 o'clock in the morning, and it's Elul, and now the Sfardim, they start saying Slichas in Elul and in Yerushalayim, and many people, even if they're not Sfardim, they also say Slichas in Elul. So we're walking, and it's dark, and you know, it's a little frightening, and it's nobody's outside, and we're by the Bukhari and Heiser, the old houses there, and all of a sudden in the distance I hear somebody say Shtei Toifas Slichas. Okay, so that's what my father wants me to record. You know, I can do that. Like, you know, get up for slichas. Like, what's the big deal? Okay. Anyhow, so we run to where the voice is. You know, at night a voice carries. And all of a sudden we see a little man in the distance. Now, we're two big teenage guys, and I'm carrying this Hefetz Chashud, you know, this big boombox. You know, this guy probably never saw a boombox in his life. And we come running over to him because I wanted to catch him. And he's so frightened, like he's not expecting anybody in the street. And all of a sudden, these two teenagers are running towards him. And he says, Vos Vilter, like, what do you want from me? I said, no, don't worry, I'm American. You know, that's the answer for all the Mishigas. You don't have to worry, I'm safe. I'm an American guy. I said, entschuldig, ich weiß nicht, ob ihr weiß, was das ist, like a tape recorder. Go explain to somebody from the 16th century, you know, what a tape recorder is. So I tried to tell him that, you know, if you say something, you could play it back and hear it again. So I said, you know, Kumfa America, and I'm going back in 2 days. It's the beginning of the Zman. And my tata told me, my father told me that there's some guy who wakes up people for slichas, and he has a beautiful nusach. Do you know who that is? Is there somebody like that who does this? He looks me up and down to make sure that, you know, I'm okay. He says, "Das ist mir." I said, "That's you?" I said, "Could you do me a favor? I'm going back to America in 2 days. Please, could you record whatever my father thinks that you say?" He says, "It's a very nice nosach." He looks me up and down, and I tell him again, "Please excuse me, I'm an American, you know, please be Michael." And he says, "Okay, now I'm going to do what he did, but I am so embarrassed to do it, but I'm going to do it for you anyway, because you will never, ever forget this for the rest of your life. You have to picture this, it's total pitch black. The only thing you could see is on Mount Olives, you know, on the other side of the Jordan, that hotel that's on top of the mountain there. And it's perfectly quiet, and we are standing next to this little man. And he clears his throat and he goes like this. Yisrael am kodesh, shtei toif la'avodas ha'boreh, rotzka tzvi v'gibor ko'ari, la'sois ritzoino v'icho shebashamayim. Yisrael am kodesh, shtei toif la'avodas ha'boreh. Then he says to me, "Okay?" Why was that okay? Yisrael am Kodesh. Yisrael, the holy nation. Shteit oif lavoides aboide. Get up to serve your creator. Rotzka tzvi. That's what the tour starts with. Rotzka tzvi. Run like a deer. Gibor kari. Be strong like a lion. Lasa is ritzoin avicha shabashamayim. To do the will of your father in heaven. Without exaggeration, my father, Olam Shalom, must have listened to that reel-to-reel at least 150 times. Every day, every morning, every night. Tzali knows that I went to Tervadas, so I had to get up, you know, to go by train. So in the morning, my mother, you always used to play QXR, classical music, you know, to wake us up. But once we had this recording, that's it, every morning. Yisrael, Am Kodesh, you know, like all over the house on the intercom system. And then that was the year, in 1965, that winter, when Avshalom Shvadron first came to America. Do you remember when Avshalom came the first time? He stayed in Kew Gardens. He stayed in my parents' home. And that's a whole long story, which is not for now. But one night, we're sitting at the table, and my father says to Avshalom, because Avshalom always had reels of Torah, Mishnayos that he learned, that he said, Musa that he said, that he listened to all the time. And my father said to Avshalom, "I want to bring you back to Yerushalayim." He said, "Rabbi Avrom, what do you mean?" He said, "Listen to this." And he put on this reel to reel, this Yisrael Am Kodesh. I'm telling you, Rabbi Shalom sat there, he closed his eyes and tears were coming down his cheeks. He said, and then when it finished, he said, "Oh yeah, I remember as a little boy, this man was a young man. I used to wake up 4 o'clock in the morning just to hear him. And then afterwards, I wrapped myself in my blanket and I went back to sleep." You know, that was the memory of the great Maggid of Yerushalayim when he was a little boy, hearing this fellow say, "Yisrael Am Kodesh." And that's really what it's all about. Yisrael Am Kodesh, Teitoif, Lavoides, Aboidei, Rotz, Katzvi, Gibor, Karri, Las, Yisritzein, Ovicha, Shabashamayim. And I'll tell you an amazing thing. One of the reasons that David Solomon and I chose this topic is because of this word that I want to tell you right now. And you know that an Odom Godol, can look at a Pasuk, could look at a Rashi, could look at a Chazal, the way we look at it, but they see so much, much more. Now let's watch this Rashi, and let's see what Rav Huttner writes with this thing. The Pasuk is in Shmois Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Zayin, a Pasuk that we're all going to repeat many times over Yontov, Ushmartem es HaMatzeis. You should watch the Matzeis. Zok Tehelge Rashi. Right? You're not supposed to make, you have to bake the matzahs quickly. How fast you got to bake them, guys? Less than 18 minutes, right? I once had a bris, and a guy tells me, "Rabbi, we're going to daven in a different shul, not my shul." So I said, "Why can't we daven in your shul?" He says, "Well, I'm embarrassed for my family because we have a matzah minion." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, we finish in less than 18 minutes. So that's why we didn't do the bris in that shul. He was embarrassed that his family should come and see that there's actually a matzah minion. Which, of course, you know, is ridiculous because that's a crummy minion. No pun intended. Okay? Now, so Rashi says, "Shelo yavoy ledei chimutz." That you shouldn't come to chametz. And Rabbi Yashi Omer, "Al tehi korei es hamatzos." Don't only read this pasuk. Ushmartem es hamatzos. You know that in the Torah, there's no nekudos. So many times Chazal will take a word and will say that you don't have to read it the way traditionally it's read, but you can read it another way and also learn a lesson. So instead of reading Ushmartem es hamatzos, you can read it Ushmartem es hamitzvos. Kederach she'ein machmitzin es hamatzos, just like you do not delay when you're baking matzos, kach ein machmitzin es hamitzvos. You don't delay when it comes to doing mitzvos. Ela imbo liyodcha asei oisomiyad. If you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, do it right away. That's what Rashi says. Ushmartem es hamatzos, he's bringing the Chazal. Ushmartem es hamitzvos. Don't delay matzos, don't delay mitzvahs. You got the opportunity, don't wait till tomorrow. Tomorrow never comes. You come today, you do the mitzvah right now, you do it with excitement. Now, listen to what Rav Hutner writes on this thing. In Pachad Yitzchok, in the Inyonim of Pesach, Maimer Aleph, the first one, he says, Midas Hazrizos, the Midah of excitement, Nidbas, is demanded from us. In every Oved Hashem, any person who considers himself an Oved Hashem, he has to be a person of Zrizos. And he says, "Anu lemeidin poi chiddush gadol." Here we learn a great chiddush. And he says like this: Hashem, for however He wanted to teach us the midah of Zrizos, He could have taught it to us in any of the mitzvahs. He could have taught it in any word of the Torah. Somehow Chazal would have been able to figure it out. But look what Chazal did. They took the word mitzvahs, and that's where they showed us the idea of zrizos. In the word matzos and mitzvahs, why? Ki chasorin hazrizos b'avodas Hashem. If somebody does a mitzvah without zrizos, without excitement, ain't perish yesh kan heder amaisa shel zrizos. You can't just say, well, the guy did the mitzvah, but he didn't do it with Jesus. But at least he did the mitzvah. He says, no, Eliyesh kan kilkul chiyuvi. There's a corruption, there's a damage in the mitzvah if you don't do it with Jesus. Hamafsid shleimus tzurosa shel hamaisa amitzvah. When that's why the Torah is telling it to you in matzahs and mitzvahs. Because if you don't do a mitzvah with excitement, it's not the mitzvah. It's not like you're doing the mitzvah except you did it without Zerizah. If you don't do it with Zerizah, that's not the mitzvah. That's why we learn it from the word mitzvahs. Because everything that you do, whether it's eating the matzah, or preparing for the Seder, or saying Hallel, or Davening, or whatever, shaking the lulav, whatever you do, it has to be with excitement. That's what a Yid is all about. That's what Rav Hutner is telling us. That's what an Oved Hashem is about. Rotz katzvi, giver kari, lasek tzoyna vichot shabashamayim. The many people, as they get older, they get burned out. There's no such thing in Yiddishkeit as getting burned out. You can't get burned out. Chas v'shalom, a person gets burned out, the Eibishter says, listen, you don't feel like you're accomplishing in this world, then you're out of here. They're chazal like that. It's frightening. A person can't get burned out. There's no such thing like that. Every mitzvah, everything that you do has to be with great excitement. That's what Rav Hutner is teaching us. And I'll tell you an amazing story. Amazing story that happened in Eretz Yisrael a number of years ago during one of the years of Shemitah. This past year was a year of Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael. It didn't happen this past year. It happened a few cycles before. Now, we know that there's such a thing as called as Perish Shvius. Perish Shvius means that something that grew and you're going to eat, something that grew during Shvius, you can't just throw it out. It's not like an apple and you can just throw out the core. You have to save it, you have to wait till it rots, and then there's a certain kedusha to perish shvius, fruit that grew in the year of shvius. And many, many people, of course, are very careful. And the Rambam says you cannot give a fruit that grew in shvius to a goy because it has a kedusha. So this story happened a number of years ago. What happened was that there was a guy who saw two apples in his refrigerator in the morning. He was going either to work or to learn, wherever he was going. And he figured when he comes home for lunch, he'll eat the two apples. He comes home about 2 o'clock, the apples are gone. He says to his wife, did you see the apples here this morning? She said, yeah, I just gave them to the Goya. You know, she was leaving and she asked for the apples. He said, what are you talking about? It's Shvius. You can't give apples, perish shvius, to a goya. Well, she said, oy vey, I didn't know the halacha, or else she forgot it was just the beginning of the year, so she wasn't used to it. He said, where is she? She says, I don't know. She put them in a bag, and she left. So what would most of us do? Okay, fine, it's an accident. No, he's going to run after her. He runs downstairs to the bus, and he sees that the bus had just left. So now, okay, the bus left. So what do you want, right? No, he's going to get a taxi. He's not going to wait for the next bus because he knows she has to go to the Tachna Merkazit, which is the main bus station. She's got to take a second bus. So he gets a cab and he gets in to the cab and he gets to where that bus is there. And he sees that she's going on to another bus and he goes and he follows her. And he says to the bus driver, listen, that lady's got something of mine. Please, let me just get it. I'm not traveling. So the bus driver says, oh, you know, hurry up, because we got to travel. So he goes back to where she's sitting. And she's holding this sakit, she's holding this bag. And he comes over to her and he says, you know, you got something of mine. And she says, alti gauti, don't touch me. And she gives back the bag with the apples and all the jewelry that she stole that day from the house. That's why she wanted the apples. That's why she wanted the bag, because she was hiding the jewelry that she stole, because she was, you know, she know where the jewelry is. Every goya, you know, that works in the house, they know where you keep your good stuff, right? So you got to trust them. But this lady wasn't planning to come back. So this guy, because he had zrizus in the mitzvah, that's why he was zaycha to get his wife's jewelry back. Now, that doesn't mean just because you're zaris, you're going to get your wife's jewelry back. But the idea is, you see how far it goes, that when a person is a zaris in a mitzvah, you see the rewards that could come from it. And you know, Rav Volba, of course, you should all learn the Svarim Alei Shur. There are very few Svarim that have such great insights. I had this chus to meet with him and to speak with him, and I love his Svarim. He has a wonderful, wonderful Sefer, Zriya Obinya Bechinuch. Every parent, every grandparent should know that Sefer. They translated it in English also. It's a wonderful, wonderful Sefer about child rearing. But he has a Sefer, two volumes, called Alei Shur. And he talks about every topic under the sun. And one of the things that he talks about is, it's in Chelek Beis on page 2, Reish Nun Zayin, 257, if you want to look it up. He's talking about the wonders of Lashon Kodesh. And he says an amazing thing. Shesheirash milas rotzayn. Now, all of us, we grew up thinking that the root of a word in Hebrew is three letters. There are many balei diktuk who say that that's not so. That really the root of a word is two letters. Many, many people hold that way. So listen what Rav Volba writes. What is the root of the word rotzayn? Rotzayn, you desire something. He says that's the lashon of rotz, running. Why? Ki masha adam roitza, that which you want, lasham hu rotz, that's where you're running. You watch yourself. What do you run for? You want to make sure to get to the Met game on time, right? You know nothing's going to happen until the seventh inning anyway, but you want to be there for the first pitch, right? So you're excited. You're running, right? When a woman runs for a sale, she wants to be there, you know, when they open up, Lord and Taylor, whatever they're opening up, right? Why? Because, you know, she might not get that best sale. So that which you run for, that's really what you run. That's what really is your desire in life. And that's why he says that the Lashon Rotzayn, the root of the word, is Rotz. And then he writes like this. He says, Zrizus, excitement, Eina rak beraglayim. Rizus and enthusiasm is not only with your legs. Elo ulai be'ika b'roish. Really, it's in your head. And what it means is like this. If let's say somebody is running to shul, or running to work, or running any place, and the guy's running so fast, he runs out to the street, chas v'shalom, and he doesn't look, a person could get killed, rachman al-islam. Right? So, Rizus is not just with your legs, it's your head. And when you rush into something, when you have to make a decision, it also doesn't mean just rush to make the decision. You have to think about it. You have to think about it. That's why when I give a title to this talk, it's called Reflective Enthusiasm. It's not just enthusiasm, excitement, you're just going to run quickly. A foolish person does that. You think about it, you make the decision, and once you make the decision, then you go for it all the way. But you think about it. And that's what Volba is telling us, that excitement and enthusiasm is ikka b'roish, not b'raglayim. So I want to tell you an amazing thing. This story was written by Rabbi Yitzchok Zilberstein, and he heard it from a man by the name of Rab Simcha Kaplan, who Nebuch already has passed away. But this Rab Simcha Kaplan was a Rav in Tzfas for many years. But when he was a Bocher, he learned in Mir. Now, on one of the trips that we went together, we went to the town of Mir in Lithuania. In those towns, until Rav Meir Shapiro built the yeshiva in Lublin, there was no such thing as a dormitory. Today, you send your child to a yeshiva, so it's automatic that most of the yeshivas today have a dormitory. But in Mir and in Tells and in Slabodka and all these places, Velazhin, there was no such thing. A person had an achsanya. A person lived in a certain house. That's where they had the meals. And that's where they lived. And they rented from those local people. But there was no such thing as a dormitory. So this Rav Simcha Kaplan lived in a house where there was a father and a mother and a single child. And one Friday morning, he hears how the wife is admonishing her husband. You're going to the next town to get something for Shabbos. Make sure you come back on time and make sure that you do it quickly. You know, because Shabbos, you know, tonight, Friday night is Shabbos, and I want you to be here back on time. And this guy, this Simcha Kaplan, like, he was a bacher. Like, he was thinking to this lady, get a life. I mean, first of all, the town next door is not so far. And he's an Erlich Yid. He's surely going to come back on time. And Shabbos is not till late at night. You know, so like, well, you know, this is 9 o'clock in the morning. So he didn't say anything while the husband was there. But then he figured, you know, he's going to ask the lady. He says, ma'am, I hope you don't mind that I'm asking, but you seem like so nervous that your husband was going to be late. You know, he's an El Chayid, and the town is not so far, and Shabbos is not till very late. They're like, well, what's all the nervousness? So she said, young man, let me tell you a story. She says, you know, when my husband and I were first married, we didn't have children for many years. And I went to the professors in Vienna. Professors are the big doctors. And every doctor said, it's impossible. I'm not going to have any children. And I was crying. And finally, I was able to have a child. And when I had the child, he was 2 or 3 years old. He got very sick. And this was the child that I was waiting for. It was the only child that I had. And now I went back to the doctors. And they said that there was nothing they could do. And I was walking in the streets and I was crying, holding this child. I was going to come back here to Mir, where I lived. And as I was walking in Vienna, a man comes over to me. I never saw this guy before. He says, why are you crying? She says, well, I shouldn't cry. This is the child I was waiting for. And now he's so sick and all the doctors are giving up. He says, lady, did you go to the Chofetz Chaim to get a bracha? You know, you're here in Vienna, you're going back. Why don't you go through Raden? She says, what do you mean? The Chofetz Chaim is so old. He's over 90. Nobody can get in to see him. He says, lady, you got no choice. You got to get a bracha from the greatest tzaddik in the world. You must go to the Chofetz Chaim. And she thinks about it, and she says, you know something? You know, you're right. I'm going to go. So she goes, and she gets a train, and she goes to the local train station, and then she has to get a carriage or a horse or whatever, however she was going to come into Raden. And she comes into the house, and she's carrying her little boy. And she begins saying that she wants to speak to the Chofetz Chaim. And they say, we're sorry. He's very old. He's very weak. He can't see anybody anymore. And she knows this is her only opportunity. She traveled here. You know, this. She's got to speak to him. And she starts yelling and screaming and crying and begging. And when she was crying and begging, the Chofetz Chaim from the back room heard a lady cry. He came out and he said, what's going on? And, well, they saw that she's holding the little child. So she says to the Chofetz Chaim, this is her child. And the doctors are giving up. He says, sit down. And he listens to the whole story of the child's illness and what the doctor said. And finally, the Chofetz Chaim says to her like this, I want to tell you two things that you should do. And if you do these two things, I guarantee you that your child is going to be well. Now, when she told the story, she said like this, I thought for sure he's going to tell me that I have to fast 50 days a year, which I would surely do for the sake of my son, and that I have to say the whole Tillim every day, which I would have done also if he would have told me that. But he didn't say anything close to that. He said, the first thing I want is that by 12 o'clock on every Friday, your house should look Shabbos-tick. The tablecloth should be on the table, and you can't put, you know, the challah there or the wine, but, you know, the silverware should be there. You could put the wine, I guess, if they didn't have a refrigerator or whatever. But the tablecloth should be set for Shabbos. Silverware should be there. Get ready for Shabbos by 12 o'clock. She couldn't believe it. She said, that's all? And then he said, no, I want another thing also. He said, I want that when you bench licht, now all of us here, the men know, that when a woman benches licht, the men still have 18 minutes to do melacha. I want that the moment that you bench licht, it's Shabbos in your home, nobody does melacha. Not you, not your child, not your husband. Everybody is makabel Shabbos when you bench licht. She says, Rebbe, that's it? He says, that's it. and you'll see that your son will be fine. And he sent her on her way. And now she's telling this story over to Rav Simcha Katz, at Simcha Kaplan, and she says, you see, my son is fine. That's why I want my husband to be back by 12 o'clock. Because I want that my house should be looking Shabbos-tick. We should all be Shabbos-tick by 12 o'clock. This was the bracha, this was the haftacha from the Chavetz Chaim. And when I heard this, I was wondering, where did Chavetz Chaim get this? Where did he get this from? Was this a nevuah that he said? Or did he see it, a pshat in the pasuk? And I want to tell you what I think. You know, there are many words in the Torah, that have double and triple meanings. Just to tell you, the Tzidkas HaTzadik says, if you want to know the real meaning of a word, find where the word appears first in the Torah. That's the real meaning. Other times, there could be other meanings, but the real meaning is the one that is written first in the Torah. Now, we know that it says, Ushmartem es HaShabbos, right? You should watch the Shabbos, right? You should observe the Shabbos. However, there is another pshat in the word Shmira. All of us remember when Yaakov hears the dream that Yosef had, what does it say? Vayekanu boy Echov, his brothers were jealous. Va'aviv, shomar es hadava. What does shomar es hadava mean? He anticipated. He couldn't wait for it. He was so excited that it should happen, that his son Yosef should be the leader. If that's the case, maybe the Chofetz Chaim taich this pasuk or shmartem es haShabbos avad. That means that you should observe the Shabbos. But you should anticipate the Shabbos. Be excited for the Shabbos. Prepare early for the Shabbos. And I remember that I once told this over to Rav Manas Mandel, and he told me over, he says, that's why it says, L'doiroisam, v'shomru v'nei Yisrael, l'shachabas l'aseis, l'shachabas l'doiroisam. It was generations. That's how the Chofetz Chaim knew it. Because it says, Shemira Shabbos l'doiroisam, this was this lady's only child, we were going to be the doirois. So if that's the case, what I want to say to all of you, that you should tell your wives and all the women that are going to watch this and listen to this, that by Thursday night, the house should look Shabbos-tick. In my house, you could all come anytime you want. Thursday night, my wife, before we go to sleep, she puts the Shabbos table, the tablecloth is on the table. Before I left, it was already on the table. Emmanuel, you saw it. It's there already. Why? Because Friday morning, when the kids come down, it's not Friday morning, it's Erev Shabbos. Now you can call me, this is a guarantee. You can call me any Shabbos that I am home. Call me 5 minutes before Shabbos and you will hear piano in the background. People ask, who's playing piano? It's my wife. I say, a wife could play piano 5 minutes before Lichtmanchen? How could that be? Terrence says, because if you're prepared the night before and you're organized and you have an enthusiasm for Shabbos, you go into Shabbos like a mensch. You can play piano, you can relax. And that's how she relaxes. So you can call me any Friday that I'm home. With this Shabbos, I'll be in Baltimore. So whatever, call me, I don't know. I don't know if it'll be Erev Pesach that way, but, you know, maybe by the kids or whatever. But the point is, that's how you prepare for Shabbos. Thursday night, have the tablecloth on. You come down Friday morning, it's a different Ramah. It's a different atmosphere in the house. And it shows the kids what Shabbos is all about. As a matter of fact, I remember that when I used to drive with Rav Shalom Shadron after my father Shalom passed away and Rav Shalom came back. So I was, you know, my early 20s, and sometimes you drive a little quicker than you're supposed to drive. And Rav Shalom would use an expression. It's very interesting. He used it and he said it in a Sephardic way. He said it in a Sephardish way because I found that this is really from Rav Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, a Sephardish Godel who had different expressions, Bituyim. He wrote a sefer called Mivchar Hapninim. It's very rare to get the sefer. If you can get it, you should get a hold of it. It's very interesting. And in that expression, I'll just say it how he said it because it's so chaviv to me that way. Then I'll say it in regular Hebrew and translate. He used to say, Pri Hamahirut Hacharata. The fruit of rushing mehirus from maher is charotas, regret. It's not a question of rushing. Enthusiasm is not rushing. Enthusiasm is seichel, reflective enthusiasm. Thinking about what you want to do, and then do it. Just priya mehirus, just to rush charota, that chas v'shalom, that could bring to charota and regret. So I find in life, you have to do things that inspire you. What inspires certain people? somebody just took a picture. I was at a bris in Lakewood, and somebody just took a picture. Zolzayin Gezunt, Rav Matisyo Solomon. He was the Sandik. The picture of Rav Matisyo and I is so inspirational to me because that man is so great and so special and so lovable and so admired. When I look at that picture, I get inspired. So there are certain gedolim that you have a closeness to. Rav Segel, right? You remember Rav Segel? Yeah, I'm sure that he's got, Tzalel has a picture of Rav Segel in his house. You have him hanging, right? It's got to be, of course. So you feel so close to an Adam Gadol, so you hang that picture near your desk. You hang that picture in your dining room or where everybody's going to see it. And that's the thing that excites you. That's the thing that motivates you. That's going to get you zrizus in everything that you do. So I'll tell you a great story and a story on the story. It's unbelievable. Rav Gifter, I remember when he was Nifter, so I called his daughter. I couldn't go to Rav Menachem Mavel, but his daughter, Mrs. Eisenberg, she told me this story. It was amazing. That when he was in high school, so in his dormitory room, he had pictures of Gedolim hanging. And he had the Chofetz Chaim and the Chartwell Rebbe, and I'm sure Rav Meir Shapiro, various Gedolim that he admired, and they hung in his dormitory room. And right in the middle of all those pictures, there was a frame with a white sheet. And on the white sheet, it said three words. Why not you? That's amazing. So here he wakes up in the morning. He's got all these pictures of all the Gedolim, right? And right smack in the middle is a picture, is a white sheet of paper. Why not you? So, okay, that's the story. So that's great, right? Because he's waking up in the morning. He sees, well, why shouldn't he be like the Gedolim? Of course. So I remember one year I told a story in Camp Monk. The next year I came to Camp Monk. Now, I don't know if any of you here have ever gone to Camp Monk, but in Camp Monk, as you walk into the lobby, there's a whole gallery of Gedolim. So it's always very nice. Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Eliyashiv, Rav Moshe, Rav Yankev, Rav Aaron, all the Gedolim, right? The next year I come back, they readjusted it, and there was a mirror right in the middle. Underneath the mirror, it said, why not you? So every kid would go there, take a picture of himself in the mirror, you know, surrounded by all the Gedolim. Why not you? That's clever. That's clever. Now, I want to say something. I know this is going to Australia and Chile and Brazil. They won't even know who Derek Jeter is, right? Or LeBron James. They don't even know these people. But, oh, you don't know either. Okay, fine. Okay, that's great. So, but what I want to say is like this. I am a big believer in sports. Sally knows that I always played sports with my children. Right, Avrami? Right? Oh, Schiller, right? What's your first name?
Avi.
Avi, son. Okay. So the idea is I'm a big believer in sports because I think that it gives kids a great feeling of self-esteem. They're good in sports. They feel good about themselves. And then eventually when they get older, so they'll feel good about themselves, the right things that they're doing. But Chas v'shalom, to allow any of your children to hang up any pictures of sports people on the walls of their home. Chas v'shalom. I'll tell you what some of these guys should hang. Not in your children's rooms. Not Kobe Bryant, not any of these type of people. They don't belong in your children's rooms, on the basement, even in their rooms where they sleep alone or whatever with brothers. But there's nothing wrong with playing sports, but those are not our heroes. Now, you want to know what message you're giving to your children? I'll tell you what. Tonight, go home and look on the outside of your refrigerator. See what's hanging on the outside of your refrigerator. That's what your family's all about. You'll see. So I'm telling you, I haven't been to most of your homes, but I'm telling you, I'm not talking about what's in the refrigerator. That's a different problem. I'm talking about outside the refrigerator, right? Right? What do you got, the Mets and Yankees schedule? You got a sphere chart, Hadlokas Neiras, picture of your grandchildren, kids' tests. What you are is on that refrigerator. Take a look. You'll see. Call me and tell me. I'd love to hear. And you have to give me your name, of course, if you're embarrassed. But the point is, also when you walk into your house, we are the Svarim. You walk into my house, you can walk in 3 feet. You look to the left, right? Rabbi Mel, you know, look to the left, right in the living room. It's right there, all the Svarim. Some people stick their Svarim in the basement. You know what that message gives to the kids? That's where I have no Yiddishkeit. Deep down. That's not how it is. What does your dining room look like? Are there tefillos on the wall? Are gedolim on the wall? Pictures of your shalayim on the wall? These are messages by osmosis. There's a family, of course I can't say where they live or who they are. A hush of a family. They have movie actors, you know, like from the 30s and 20s or whatever. You know, every time I walk into that house when I do a grandson, I can't look at it. Like, what are you teaching your children? What is that doing there? You got to be crazy to hang up those kind of things. Because that's the message by osmosis. And that's what Rav Gifter was doing. That's what he was putting up, that sign, why not you? Because all these are ways of bringing excitement and bringing enthusiasm to a child and doing mitzvahs. I'll tell you an amazing thing, an amazing story. What does it mean to have a love for mitzvahs, how it's given over to children? It's just incredible. I had this chus 1 year, and I want to tell you exactly what year, because you'll see in a minute how important it is. It was the year 2000. And I was traveling to Eretz Yisrael for Sukkot. Now, Sukkot is the greatest time in the world. If you've never been to Eretz Yisrael on Sukkot, then you haven't experienced Eretz Yisrael in its glory. Just the Simchas Beis HaShe'eva, and the days before Yontif in Geula with the Lulavim and the Esrogim and the decorations and everybody there. It's nothing like it, Eretz Yisrael Sukkot. Fine. So now, we're traveling. I'm on the plane. And I meet Rabbi Shlomo Jacobowitz. Shlomo Jacobowitz was the brother of Rabbi Emanuel Jacobowitz, who was the chief rabbi in London. And Shlomo Jacobowitz, I've had the chus to know him for many, many years. He had, when he was, before he retired, a whole network of schools in Toronto called Eitz Chaim. It must be 1,000 kids in the Eitz Chaim network of schools. And he was the main dean, the menial. So we're standing, you know, talking on the plane. And I said to him, this is a question that I love to ask people who come from a family of wonderful brothers and sisters. Tell me about your parents. Not about your brothers and sisters. I know how they are. I want to know, how did the parents raise these kids? How did they come to have these children? It's a great question to ask when you see a wonderful family. What did the parents do? So I asked him, I said, Rav Shlomo, tell me, what was your father like? Look at you, look at your brother, so accomplished. He thinks for a second and he says, I want to tell you what happened in 1938. So now, 1938, that's 62 years earlier than what we're standing in the year 2000, right? 62 years. And he remembers it like yesterday. He said it was before Sukkot. And it was a month before Kristallnacht. Kristallnacht, most of you know, was in November 38. So this is October 38 when Sukkot happens. He says everybody was afraid to build a sukkah, because if you built a sukkah and the Nazi soldiers, the SS guards were walking up and down the streets and they looked into your backyard or they looked into your porch and they saw a sukkah, they could break it down, arrest the father, take him to jail, he would lose his job. It was terrible. He said, we lived on the third floor. Now, on the third floor, and our porch faced the front street. However, the porch had a retaining wall to make sure that children would not fall. So the wall was a certain amount high, and you couldn't see behind that wall. He said, my father, in that porch, built a sukkah 10 tvachim high. That's 40 inches. That's this high from the floor. Now, if you look in the first Mishnah of sukkah, take a look at the first Mishnah of sukkah, you'll see that you could build a sukkah 10 tvachim. Why would anybody, anywhere, build a sukkah, asar tvachim? That sounds like a child are playing and building a sukkah. No, that's what they needed in Berlin. Because when you looked up now, so the wall was a little bit higher than 10 tvachim. So he built the sukkah and he put schach on top of it. But as the SS guards were walking in the street, they looked up there, they couldn't see anything because it was just a solid retaining wall. And Rabbi Jacobus told me that his father and his brothers and himself, they didn't miss one meal, sukkahs, that year. They all sat on pillows, sat on the floor, and they ate every meal. That's Mesiras Nefesh. Now, they didn't sing Zmiras out loud. Okay, that they didn't do. We understand that, right? You don't want anybody to hear downstairs. And he said he was very fortunate because the neighbors from the upper floors could see down to them and didn't say anything. So that was Baruch Hashem. But if somebody has such excitement and such a enthusiasm to do a mitzvah, what do you think his kids are going to be like? I don't know how many of you know a guy by the name of Zevi Trenk. Tremendous person. Zevi Trenk is amazing. He's one of the Menalim in Daka Torah today, but he lived in Brooklyn and learned in Mir for many, many years in Brooklyn. So I was told that every Shabbos, he doesn't come home right after the meals, right after davening on Shabbos. He goes to all the shuls and he invites anybody who doesn't have a meal, and especially homeless people, and you could come to his house and there'll be 40 people sitting at his table. There'll be like 30 men here and 10 women, you know, with his wife and the other table in the other room. It's just absolutely incredible. So I once heard this story that he once went into a coat store and he said to the guy, I need a raincoat. I need raincoats. He said, what size? I said, I need all sizes. He said, what do you mean all sizes? He says, I have a lot of guests. Some are tall, some are short, some are fat, some are skinny. So I need all kinds of size raincoats because it starts raining and it wasn't raining in the morning. How are these people going to get home? I couldn't believe that story. I mean, does this sound like, like something any of us would do? So I met his wife once. I said, Mrs. Train, could you tell me, is that story really true that your husband bought all these raincoats? She says, I don't know, but I'll tell you this, we're at a size 42. So I was at his house once. I once had a Shabbos bris and I ate a suda by him. It's really true. That's what he does. Now, if that is his hachnos hasarcham, what in the world do you think his kids are going to be like? They must be extraordinary. I don't know them, but I can guarantee you that they're extraordinary. Because they see the father has such a love for a mitzvah. It's not only that he's inviting people. He's going out to pick them up in shuls. He's going out to buy them raincoats. That's what zrizus. That's what excitement. That's what a mitzvah is all about. So I'll tell you two amazing stories that happened with me at Brisson. It was a couple years ago. I had a bris for a Russian fellow. He had just come over. And his English was not the greatest. And you know, anytime that I get a call for a bris, I have to tell the father, you know, to get ready, and you know, ointment, gauze pads, and everything like that. And I tell him, you know, a baby was born on Tuesday, the bris should be the next Tuesday. Now, one of the things that many non-frum people can't understand is miktas hayayim kekulay. Like, if a baby's born Tuesday, an hour before the shkia, how do you count that as day one? Like, it was at night, right? So the next day is day one. So sometimes, you know, they think that the bris should be really on the ninth day, it's supposed to be on the eighth day. Now, I thought that I explained it very well to this father that the bris was supposed to be next Tuesday. And he only wanted it in the afternoon. He didn't want it in the morning. He had to go to work or whatever. So we made it for Tuesday at 4 o'clock. I live in Queens, and the shkia was about 4:30. So I left my house at 3 to make sure that I was going to be there on time because he didn't want to come too close to shkia. Excuse me, to shkia. I get off the elevator. It's very quiet. What do you mean, 4 o'clock in the afternoon? There's supposed to be 30, 40 people at the bris. How could it be quiet, you know, on this floor? And I mean, this has happened to every single mile, I'm sure, that sometimes the last day they change the place of the bris and they call everybody except the mile because he's not on the list of the family, right? He's not on the guest list. So I've had a case. I've more than once. You come to a shul, they're not there. What happened? I don't know. So if you don't have a cell phone, man, you're messed up because how are you going to call? How are you going to call? So you have to wait until it's so late that they call and want to know where you are. You know, they call your wife and your wife's trying to reach you. It's just crazy. So that was my first gut reaction that they forgot to tell me that they switched a place. But I figured, okay, I'll knock on the door. 3A. Knock on the door. A babushka comes to the door. You know, is wearing a house coat. She says, can I help you? I said, what do you mean, could you help me? Don't we have a bris here today? She says, well, speak to Natasha. She's on the couch with the baby. Natasha, don't we have a bris today? She said, I told my husband to call you yesterday. I knew he had the wrong day. He thinks it's tomorrow. I said, tomorrow? I told him today's the eighth day. So I thought for sure she's going to send me home. But she said, you want to call him? I said, yeah, where is he? At work? Yeah, he's working out. That's what he meant, he's working out. Right, he's in the gym. So that's why I couldn't do the bris in the morning. Anyway, so I call him up and I say, Ivan, you know, the bris is supposed to be today. He says, really, today? He says, so I thought for sure he's going to say, okay, listen, you know, nobody's coming here today. Come tomorrow. He says, how much time do we have left? No, by now it's 10 after 4. So I say, we got 20 minutes. Could you get here? He says, I'll get here. Rabbi, you get everything ready. I'll get there. Okay. He comes in a sweatsuit, man. He's still sweating or whatever. I have to give him a yarmulke. He freshens up, whatever. 4:20, we do the bris. 4:22, we finish 4:29. Baruch Hashem, before the shkia. Fine. The next day, I tell him, don't you dare say anything to anybody. Let everybody come tomorrow. I'm coming here tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I come the next day, I get off the elevator. Azatumul. It's 40, 50 people. It's unbelievable. I walk inside. Everybody thinks there's going to be a bris. And, you know, I set up, you know, the table as if I'm going to do a bris. And we bring in the baby, Baruch Haba. Everybody's so happy, smiling. And then I say, Ivan, come here. I put my arm around him, and I say to everybody, I want you to know what kind of tzaddik you have as a friend. You see, Ivan didn't have the opportunity to learn in a yeshiva like many Americans did. He just came recently from Russia. But in his heart, he knew that if Hashem, if God tells him to do a mitzvah, it's got to be done on time. So Rabbi Yisai, there's only vodka today. There's no bris. And you could have bagels and lox and whatever you want. But and then we made a little ceremony and I told everybody about the name. But I said, this is a man who understands what Zrizus is all about. And then a few months later, something else happened you would not believe. I'm coming home from a late afternoon Jersey bris. I'm on the Verrazano and my wife calls me in the car. And she says, Ezra is on the phone. And he's frantic. I said, Ezra, what do you mean that's tomorrow morning's bris? She says, you must call him. He's frantic. I call him, Ezra, what's the problem? She says, my wife just went to the pediatrician. The baby was yellow. That's why we postponed the bris till tomorrow. But he's not yellow anymore. The doctor says we could do the bris right now. I said, right now? What do you mean right now? You know, I'm on the Verrazano. You live in Hewlett, you know, in the five towns. I'm not going to get there before the Shkia. He says, Rabbi, but we got to do the bris. I said, okay, I'll get you a mile from the five towns. He says, okay, call my wife and arrange it. I said, what do you mean your wife? Where are you? He says, I'm in Manhattan. I said, you're in Manhattan. How are you getting to the bris before Shkia? If I live to be 160, I'll never forget what he said. He said, Rabbi, it's more important for me that my son should know that he had his bris on the eighth day and his father wasn't there than that the bris should be on the ninth day just because I had to be there. And wouldn't you believe it? He would not believe it. The only ones at the bris, I got a local mile to go there before the Shkia. The only ones at the bris was the mile, the mother, and the grandmother. And I never had the guts to ask him who was the tzaddik. Because I think it was the nurse. I didn't want to ask him what he did. But, and you know something? When I wanted to write this second story about Ezra in the book, he said, Rabbi, you cannot write my name. I said, why? He said, my parents are so angry at me of what I did. Because the next morning, everybody came to the Young Israel of Woodmere or whatever. You know, and they were all expecting a bris, and there was no bris. I said, your parents, really, they should be proud of you. Because you did what was the right thing, to do the bris at the right time. That's what Zrizus is all about. So let me tell you one more great thing, and then we'll end with a great story. In the summer of 1941, there was a man who lived in Gateshead. His name was Rab David Ryan. He was a sheikhet. And Rab David Ryan wanted to start a kollel in Gateshead. There were no kollels there in Gateshead at that time. And so he wrote a letter to 22 rabbonim asking them if they would come to Gateshead to come and build a kollel. 18 didn't even bother to answer him. 18 didn't even bother to answer him. Three said no. One replied. One man replied. You know who that man was? Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler. And that's when Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler came to Gateshead and he built a kollel. And of course, not only was that kollel so extraordinary, it raised the Ramah of learning in Gateshead, it raised the Ramah in England, and it raised the Ramah of learning all over Europe. Because that became the Degem, the role model, the one to emulate. And that, Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler was there eventually until he moved to Ponovich and Eretz Yisrael, where he became the Mashgiach there. But I want to tell you what Rabbi Dessler wrote and how important it is for all of us to take advantage of opportunities. Listen to what he writes in Michtav Meliyo, Volume 1, page 20 in Dagdama. Now, I am sure that he wrote this as he was older and he looked back and he saw what he had accomplished. What he had accomplished in Gateshead to build such a yeshiva and such a kollel. He writes like this: sometimes when a person gets involved in something that's even beyond him, it's greater than what he ever thought that he could be involved in. Al yedei schus she'ena shaloi. He has a schus that's not even his. And he zoicha al yedei zeh l'siyata d'shmaya shehu yis'ala b'madregosai. Sometimes there's a problem in Klal Yisrael, and people aren't doing anything about it. And you figure, who am I? How could I get involved? You know, there's bigger people that are not doing anything. And you get involved, Rebbe Yoel Dessler says, all of a sudden, you get such schusim. And the Eibishter helps you. Gam zoicha sheyatzliach ki misha tzrichim loy latikun ha'olam. When the Rabbanu Shel Olam needs you to fix a problem in the world, even if you're not royal avoid the zois, mikol mokaim acha she'ein acha she'yochel aroitzel la'asek chutz imenu zoichel kol hasiata d'shmaya. Sometimes there are many problems in Klal Yisrael, whether it's shidduchim, whether it's kids at risk, or people without jobs, or whatever. And you figure, who am I? I'm so small. How am I going to solve the problem? No, but you throw yourself into it. And Hashem says, you know something? I needed you. And you were there for me. I'm going to give you such great schusim and such great hatzlacha. And that's how Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler looked at it. Because he was the only one who responded. He probably figured some of the other rabbanim were greater than him. But he got all the schusim. And he was able to build it successfully because he went and he did it. That's what excitement is. That's what enthusiasm is. All of us are aware of many problems in Klal Yisrael. Don't sit back. Throw yourself into it. You never know what kind of great hatzlacha you could have. I'll give you a small example. I'm embarrassed to talk about it. But I'm going to talk about it anyway because it happened with me. And it's changed so many, many people. And I remember when we went on one of the trips, we went to Frankfurt, and I went to the cave of Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch, and when I did my research, and I did my research on Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch, I realized that he married a woman that was 4 years older than him. And when they asked him, how could you marry a girl that's 4 years older? And he said, for what I have to accomplish in life, I can't marry a child. And when I was at that cave, I showed everybody, look at his cave, look at his wife's cave. She was 4 years older than him. I said, where does it say in the Torah that the boy has to be older? There's no such thing. All of us, most of us here, we all married women that were younger. Why does that have to be? There's no reason for that. And I began talking about it. And that winter, I was at a Torah Mitzvah convention. I spoke at Shalosh Shudas. And I spoke for 700 women. I said, there's no reason in the world that a boy shouldn't go out with a girl that's a year or two older than him. And I spoke about Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch, and I told the example. A few weeks later, I get a call from a woman in Lakewood. And she says to me, Rabbi Krohn, I want you to know, this is the first time I was ever at a Torah Mitzvah convention. I'm a Mechaneches for many years. And when you spoke about that, my son was supposed to go out with a girl 2 years older than him. I never would have let him do it. But you spoke about it. And I was thinking, you know, you might be right. And not only that, then I found out the girl was a descendant, Mamash, a direct descendant from Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch. So I said to my son, he's got to go out with her. I didn't tell her. I just said she's a little older. I didn't say how much. And they just got engaged. And I got a call from this side, and I got a call from that side. Her name is Lavovitz, and it's unbelievable. Everybody was so happy. And then as soon as I heard that, then I started talking about it on the Chofetz Chaim video, and thousands of people saw it. And now, every Shatzchan in Lakewood, and you know, there's hundreds that I know of, where the girls are older than the boys. And you know, that family had a boy. They called me to do the bris, and what did they name the baby? Shamshon Mofal. And 2 years later, she had another boy. She couldn't name Rav Shamshon Fol, but that boy was born on Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch's yahrzeit, if you could believe it. The Lavovitz family in Lakewood. So he was one person, one simple guy, who had an idea and had the opportunity to speak about it and changed so many people. Why not? Why not? You have an idea, go for it. Believe in yourself. The Tzidkas HaTzadik says there's three things you got to believe in. You got to believe in Hashem, you got to believe in Torah, and you got to believe in yourself. You got a solution to a problem, talk about it. Get friends involved. Don't be afraid. That's what Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler said. That's enthusiasm. That's excitement. That's not being burned out. That's the mitzvah. Shemarta Masam Matzah, Shemarta Masam Mitzvahs. Part of the mitzvah is doing things with great, great excitement. I just want to end with this. We'll review quickly and end with a fabulous story. Oh, it's wow, so beautiful to tell the story tonight. It just occurred to me because it's involved with Ramea Soloveitchik, who just passed away just a few weeks ago. But I'll just tell you this. I remember one time I was in Baltimore and I met a geriatrician. I never knew what a geriatrician was. Then I found out it's a pediatrician for adults. Geriatrician works with older people. So this guy, Menachem Cooper, told me that he works in many different nursing homes. And he said there was a lady that never, her mind was gone, come out already. And every time he saw her, she used to sing, not sing, but tell him a certain poem. And he said it was so wonderful to hear it from her. And she used to say like this: yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift of God. That's why we call it the present. Isn't that great? Yesterday is history. Whatever happened, forget about it. It's over. Tomorrow's a mystery. Tomorrow never comes. Right? And today is a gift of Hashem. That's why we call it the present. Worry about today. Worry about tonight. Worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow. What happened yesterday? Forget about it. Today's the present. It's the greatest gift that Hashem gives us. Take advantage. Make sure every day. We're going to count spheres soon. Arichas Yomim is what we want. What's not Arichas Shonim? Nobody guarantees Arichas Shonim. Nobody knows what tomorrow brings. But everybody could have Arichas Yomim, length of days. Make the most out of every single day. That's what it's all about. So let's review very quickly, and then we'll end with this great story that happened with Rav Vel Soloveitchik and at Rav Meir Soloveitchik, who was just niftah at his Sheva Brachas. Let's remember Chashti V'Loyis Mamati. Rav Treger taught us that David HaMelech hurried. But it's not that he was delayed. He hurried because he was excited to do the mitzvah. Shulchan Aruch starts, Rotzka Tzvi Gira Kari Lasa Yisotzoin Avicha Sheva Shemayim. That's how that tzaddik in Eretz Yisrael woke up people for slichas. Let's remember that fellow who ran after the woman to get his apples back, and he got his wife's jewelry back. Let's remember what Rav Volba told us. That Rotzain comes from the word Rotz. You want to see what you really like? What your Rotzain is? See where you're running. Priya Mehirus is Harota. It's not just rushing, it's reflective, it's with your head, Rav Volba tells us. Let's remember Rav Gifta put up that sign. Why not you? Maybe do it in your kids' room. They'll get a kick out of it. Let's remember Rav Yael Jacobowitz, how he built that sukkah, 10 tfachim, and how he had such wonderful children. Let's remember Rav Dessler responded when nobody else responded. And he had all the great, great, great hatzlacha. And let's remember yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery. Today is a gift of Hashem. That's why we call it the present. When Rav Meir Soloveitchik, who was just nifter, when he had Sheva Brachas, it was in Waukesha's, actually. And I just, when I was reading about him, I saw something so interesting. I told it to my kids last Thursday night. I said that Rav Soloveitchik made the first chasana of his oldest son in Yerushalayim. But then he saw in the Rambam that there's an inyan to have musical instruments at a chasana. And in Yerushalayim, the very from people, they don't have musical instruments at the chasana. So every single chasana he made afterwards was in Bnei Brak. So they should have musical instruments because he felt that's what the Rambam says. So Rav Meir's chasana was in Waukesha's. And the Sheva Brachas was there also. And one night by the Sheva Brachas, there was people were singing and Rav Velvel was in a very good mood. So every song that people sang, Rav Velvel had a medrash or a chazal to say about that song. Whatever they sang. There was a man, I had the schus to meet him, his name was Rav Zev Edelman. He was an edel person, an old person, a tzaddik, an edel yid. They said, Rav Zev, sing and again for the chosen kala. And the Rebbe Darshanan, Etel Gishem, he didn't want to sing for the chosen kala. He said, Ichel sing for the Rebbe. He's going to sing a song in honor of the Briskerov. So he stands up and he starts singing, Yomim Ayimei Melech Tosif, right? Everybody stood up and everybody was singing, Yomim Ayimei Melech Tosif, days should be added to the king. It's Tilam Samach Aleph Pasuk Zion. Everybody sat down. Everybody started looking at Rav Velvel. Now he's got a darshan. Now, even if he was prepared to darshan for all the songs of Chasana, there was no way he was prepared for this. But listen to his genius, what he said, right on the spot. When they asked him to darshan on this pasuk, Samach Aleph Zayin and Tilim, he said the Radak has a machloikis. Who is the melech in this pasuk? If it's Dovra Melech, so fine, I understand. Yomim Ayim Melech Tosif, they should be added to the king. Why? Because he was only going to live to 70, they should be added to the king. But if the melech is Melech HaMashiach, once the Melech HaMashiach comes, he's living forever. So what does it mean? Yomim Ayim Melech Tosif, they should be added to the king. How could you add days to the king if he's going to live forever? Who knows the Teretz? Come on, guys. Free book if you come up with the Teretz. How could you add to infinity if he's going to live forever? How do you make him live longer?
long day is not long
day. Oh, that's one teretz. What did he say? Who just? There you go. He should come earlier. If he comes earlier, that's Yom Ha'im Melech Tosef. David should have helped in this chus. Ashur Baruch Ben Golda. In this chus that we learned about enthusiasm and excitement by the mitzvah of Hagam Matzos, we should do all the mitzvahs with excitement. That David should see that Taka, we want everything with Zrizus. He should bring Taka Mashiach earlier. He should bring him with Zrizus. And we should be Zoicha to the Gula Shlema. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening. You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.